is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
The kid that's confident is going to show you more stuff because they're just going to try. They're just going to go for it, right? They're throwing caution to the wind. And on the other one, you're having to say, come on, you can do it. And you're trying to get them to even try. And they're worried about making mistakes.
JC Landivar is the chief product officer at SportsLab 360 and a youth sports parent and coach. In his role at SportsLab 360, JC has collaborated with CEO Nick Manzoni to build partnerships with industry leaders while also growing SportsLab 360's user base and helping to expand the sports offering portfolio from soccer to basketball. Hey, Hoopheads, Dr. Dish Basketball is ringing in the new year with big savings. This January, buy one Dr. Dish, get one free, or unlock exclusive single-unit discounts during their 2024 Super Sale. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
This is Eric Gabriel, men's assistant basketball coach at High Point University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Have a pen and paper handy as you listen to this episode with JC Landivar, Chief Product Officer at SportsLab 360. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome JC Landivar, Chief Product Officer for SportsLab 360 and youth sports parent, youth sports coach. We're going to dive into a bunch of different things with JC. Welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Mike, thanks. Jason, thanks. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
We are thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the different things that you've been able to do, both in your career and as a parent and coach. Let's start by going back to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about some of your athletic background, how you got into sports, what your family life was like growing up, as a sports kid.
Yeah. So can't see on the podcast, but I've earned every one of my gray hairs. I live in Houston, Texas right now, but I'm actually born in San Francisco, California. Right. And people ask me, oh, what part? Well, no, San Francisco, like San Francisco. I actually went to high school in the center of the city at Sacred Heart Cathedral, and went to school in the Sunset. For anybody who knows about this, so I'm a relative unicorn in that regard, because not many of us seem to be around. And my life really started with sports. It really opened up doors for me. So, like I said, I was born in San Francisco, and we moved to Houston for a while, and then we moved back to San Francisco. And that's actually where my basketball career started. I actually started playing football, if you believe this, before I played basketball. And when I started playing basketball in San Francisco, man, it was probably the medicine that I needed. It's always been that thing. Once it started, I could not get enough of it. And it was a way for me to escape, a way for me to find safety, a way for me to find confidence, a way for me to learn about not only basketball itself, but how I could get better at other things. Because let me tell you something, when I first started, it was like I had two left feet on my hands, you know? And that's how, I mean, seriously, right? I was an awkward kid. I was a tall kid, but I was an awkward, kid. And But once I started going and I started getting there, I couldn't get enough. And, you know, little by little, I just got, you know, better and better. And I found my rhythm and I couldn't get enough. And I mean, you'd find me practicing and playing at all hours of the night, you know, and in San Francisco, you know, I transported myself. You know, you have a great transportation system. So constantly going from, you know, school to playground, to the basketball court, and then, you know, coming home late, not too late, but, you know, late, you know, like, you know, or already dark. Let's not say that my parents weren't watching me, but, you know, like for me, right, it was already like I had to come back by dinner time, but right, it was already there. And, you know, playing in San Francisco gets really cold because I'm playing outside, but, you know, I'd love it. It was always, you know, it was a great partner in growing up. So, yeah.
What's your favorite part of pickup basketball? Because I think it's one of those things that, look, I'm 53 years old, and it's one of those things that I feel like, I say this all the time on the podcast, JC, that I feel like kids today, my own kids, have missed out on something that I feel was like a huge part of A, my development as a basketball player, but B, just a huge part of my life in terms of when I look back on fond memories from my childhood. A lot of those fond memories come from me being at the park playing pickup basketball, me being on my driveway playing 2-on-2 with the neighbors. Right. And it's just an experience that kids today, they don't get to have that same experience. They're usually in a gym with a parent in the stands, with a coach, with officials, and they're not just playing pickup basketball. So for you, when you think back to that time of just going around the city and being able to play in pickup games, what are some things that you remember just in terms of, A, maybe your development as a player, but also just in terms of what was fun about it? Like, what'd you love about that?
Oh man, I loved getting on the court. So for me, like I said, I was a tall kid, so they always try to play, you know, put me at center. But I quickly got good at passing the ball, and I love making plays. I love getting my teammates involved. And don't get me wrong, like I'll shoot the ball. I'm not squeamish about that. But I loved, you know, trying things out like fearlessly, right? Like I didn't care if I was gonna mess it up or not. I would try things out, and that's what it was my own laboratory, right? So that's what I loved about it. I got to try those things out, and you know, in my organized basketball, you know, unfortunately, you know, my coach would, you know, tamper things down, right? But you know, because you're in place, but I would get a feel for it and a rhythm for it, and this really actually takes me into like coaching now. Because I see like this basketball IQ, that's what I'm gonna call it, basketball IQ, basketball rhythm. I have to tell these kids, hey, go watch, you know, some games, because they're getting the academic version of things at practice, but you get a rhythm when you play with different people. When you're playing pickup games, you know, you're faced with different defenders, with different players on, you know, on your team, different players on the opposing team. And so you have to figure things out as you go, right?
No, the whole time you're talking, I'm kind of just sitting here nodding my head, because I hear what you're saying in terms of, to me, I always feel like it's that feel for the game. It's that basketball IQ. It's that creativity that I loved when you said that, you know, your coach kind of tamped you down. And to some degree, right, I mean, you play differently. Everybody does. You play differently in a regular game with a coach than you would in a pickup game. But I think one of the things that is maybe discounted is that I played and you played, and I know Jason played a lot in games that are just, they're pickup games. And so sometimes you might be the best player on that court. You can be creative. You can say, all right, I'm going to just work on dribbling my left hand, and I'm going to work on trying to shoot left-handed layups, or this game, I'm only going to throw no look passes, or this, you know, and you could do that because the stakes were much lower. And you also had an opportunity to do that without somebody looking over your shoulder. Now, again, depending on what kind of pickup game you're playing, there's also pickup games where you might be the worst player on the court, and then you got to do something totally different in order to fit in and make sure that you're helping your team win and all those things. But I just feel like when you start talking about feel for the game, it's difficult to develop that sort of creative feel for the game when you're always in an organized setting. And that's what I hear you saying. And I think that's so true.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a balance, right? Because pickup games are your sandbox, your lab, where you can try different things out. Because there's a place where those they meet, right? Where you've got the things that a coach can teach you and a system can teach you. But, you know, the rhythm, you know, when you get to a certain level, you kind of can balance these two things together, right? So you and I are very similar in age. You've got me by 2 years. But so, you know, we were, you know, like right before And One was really, you know, coming in and Street Ball became really, you know, but you have those and now you see that there's benefit to it. It's kind of like when you're watching the Brazilians play soccer, right? There's a fun, and they have rhythm to their game in soccer. And there's a blend that happens there. For me, I always try to play up. Like I try to play with older kids. And so most of the time I wasn't the best or the fastest or what have you. But what I did is I could pass the ball. I could make them and that they love that, right? So that's how I found my end, right? And then as my shot developed, then I also became a threat in that capacity, right? Because they were still bigger than me and they were still faster than me. So I was able to utilize that. But that was through observation by playing the game and realizing what was going on around you, right?
Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, I think that when you start talking about having to be able to fit into a role and kind of understanding your place in a game and being able to figure that out on your own and not having an adult tell you, hey, this is what you're going to do and this is your position or you're this or you're only going to rebound or you're only going to be the point guard or you're only going to do X, Y, or Z. Instead, when you go and you play in a pickup game, whether you're playing 2-on-2 with some neighborhood kids in your driveway or whether you're going and you're showing up at some college gym and you're playing with some really, really good players, that pecking order kind of gets established. And I think that's one of the fun things when you think about pickup basketball is you kind of go and nobody knows each other depending upon where you're at. And everybody kind of figures it out like, hey, this dude can play. I want to be on his team. And then I always say this, JC, there's guys, and I'm sure you can relate to this, that you show up at a court and you play with a guy for like 2 minutes and you're like, this dude dribbles between his legs 17 times. And then takes a shot and never looks the pass to anybody. I never want to play with this guy again. And those guys are instantaneously recognizable. And yet, if you ask them, they're completely self-unaware that they're like, man, look at my skills. I got all this. And anybody who knows how to play is like, I don't want any part of this guy. Because again, that comes back to basketball IQ and having a feel for what it's like to play with four other dudes as opposed to just being, I'm an and-one mixed tape star and I can do all these moves against the cone. So
exactly. I mean, and it's interesting you mentioned that because think about how, you know, it's the rules are self-made. I mean, it's almost like known. Nobody talks about them. Nobody says that, right? But it's a known thing. That player you just talked about, I mean, at some point he's going to learn because people will not pick him up.
Right,
and,
exactly.
I mean, seriously, they're going to be like, oh man, you know. Or we'll start talking on the side, like, hey, let's wait. Well, you know, you're trying to, cause you play with people a certain, you know, amount of time, or you see somebody, you know, new and you're kind of, you know, sizing them up and like, you know, I wonder if they're, you know, any good or what they can do. Right. And it evolves on its own and you've got your own system of check and balances in this ecosystem. And it's not even, like I said, it's not verbalized. It just is what it is. And you could travel around in different places. And here's an interesting thing. It also evolved differently in different parts. Like if you went to different parts of the US, right? Because like, for instance, we used to call, you know, the game, you know, 21, you ever played 21?
Yep.
Okay. So we called it Hunch.
Okay.
That's what it was called. It was called Hunch. And then I went, you know, to Texas and it was 21. Okay. So it's the same game. It's just different, but you have a lot of similarities of what, you know, of unsaid things, right? Like, you know, is it make it take it? All these little rules that are already known, right? It's the same vocabulary, right?
Right.
And it's organic. It's I love that about it.
yeah, you show up at a court, you know, this court, it's 11 by two, or this court, it's seven. And back when I was playing pickup basketball, there was no, now everybody plays threes and twos. But back when I played, it was just, everything was one, right? I mean, there was no, there was no threes, there were no twos. Right. It was just, everything was 1 point. And, you know, you show up at a court and it's kind of like, hey, these are sort of the rules of the jungle, and you got to get in there and you got to figure it out. And a lot of times you do that by standing on the sideline or talking to people, or sometimes you get yourself into a game. And, you know, we've all been in pickup games where every single foul gets called and nobody kind of bats an eye. And then you can go to other courts where, man, you call one foul and dudes are all over you. Like, hey man, you can't be calling that kind of stuff. And so you kind of learn the laws of the courts where you're at. And it's something that you got to, as you said, a lot of them are unspoken, and you kind of just got to figure it out when you show up there, which is, again, interesting. Something totally different that players growing up in the game today don't have to do, don't get to do, I guess is probably a better way to say it.
Yeah. What I also like about that scenario is that when you're playing pickup basketball, you know, and I'm a coach, so you know, this is kids are being told about their mistakes all the time at school. It's unfortunate, but it is. It's like, you know, getting something wrong is, you know, is a bad thing. But the thing is that, like, in pickup basketball, you learn on your own. You're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. You just go to the next play, but you're going to learn not to do what you did, you know, pretty quickly, because you don't want to let your team down, and you also want to play well, right? And so it's just this free environment of learning, right? And experimenting and trying things, right? And for me, as I got older and as I started playing, you know, more a higher level basketball, you know, I still used, you know, tricks to have fun, right? But I was starting to use more and more of what I was learning in, you know, in my coached basketball training. I was starting to pull that out of my bag because coaches were starting to talk to me about, you know, positioning and how, you know, how to use your body more efficiently, basically, right? And so pickup games became it kept on evolving over, you know, over time. And I love that about it too, because you just kept on finding more and more from the game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a melding, right? It's a melding of some of the skills that you learn on the playground, and then you get into an organized situation and there's some of those things that you can obviously put to use and be able to be a more creative player. And yet again, do it in the confines of what, you know, a team scenario is going to look like. And so there's definitely, when I look at it, it's like I always say, I love the way that I grew up in the game. I probably would have loved, if I was a kid today, I probably would have loved the opportunity to play 60 AAU games from March to July and all the things that kids get to do and be in a nice gym on a nice court, as opposed to being on the cement with a chain net or a bent backboard and all, you know, a rim that was 4 inches too low and all the different things that you kind of have to deal with, the gravel on the court and everything else. When you start talking about playing outdoors, I mean, now kids, especially when you talk about high level basketball, I mean, those kids never set foot on an outdoor court at all. And
right.
Look, there's something to be said for that. I mean, in terms of positivity and for their body and not putting miles running up and down on the cement. But at the same time, I do feel like kids have missed out on, you know, have missed out on something. And so it's never going back to the way it was, and you can lament it all you want. And I think as a coach, one of the things that you try to do is find the positive and try to work with it to try to make your players better within the confines of sort of that system that we have today. So tell us a little bit about your coaching background, how you got into coaching, what sort of led you down that path, and just tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've done as a coach.
Yeah. So coaching actually started when I was really young. Like when I was in high school, I started coaching. I went back to my elementary school and I started coaching the girls team, and I started coaching the little kids, right? That's kind of where it started, because for me, I mean, like basketball really did, like I moved back, right? And it was such an abrupt thing for me that basketball really kind of saved me in so many ways, right? And it had always been like that place. It was my sanctuary, like I could go out there, you know, for hours just myself and just shoot and, you know, do something, you know, just, I didn't need even to play a game. So it was my sanctuary. So I loved being able to, you know, give back because it's always been part of my personality. And now back when I was younger, I didn't think of it that way, but it was, I enjoy helping people. And I think that's a hallmark or a common trait that you find in coaches. They really want to give back or help people. And that's what it is for me. I think about these kids and, you know, I don't ever need them to, you know, remember me. I hope that maybe someday down the line that they find confidence and strength in the future in a moment that hopefully I was able to give them, any kind of moment, right? And they don't need to even be, you know, basketball players, but what they take away from that moment where they can find the confidence, where they can find, you know, the notion that, hey, if I work at something, if I put time in something, I can get better, right? And so I really loved that aspect of it. So I started doing that when I was younger, right? And, you know, as I got older, I kept that up whenever I could, given time, got into college. I also tried to do coaching or been involved in sports in some way, shape, or form, you know? And then by the time I became a father, a parent, right, I really wanted to coach. And so, you know, fast forward, my kid got old enough and, you know, I really wanted to not only have the opportunity to coach their teams, but coach kids in general. So that's what I've been doing, right? I just kept that up, coaching wherever I can and giving my time, whether it's volunteer or, you know, or what have you, always trying to, you know, participate in some way. And sometimes it's even helping the coaches that are out there that are, right. That are, you know, because I know what it's like. I'll never second guess a coach and I'll never do that. Right. That's just not, there's some, because I mean, unless a child is being, you know, harmed in some way, but you right, know, right. I've never, but you know, I'll just try to, you know, help out whatever I can. Like I'll be there to grab cones to, you know, whatever, right. Grab the pennies to help them, whatever it is. Right. Because it's a hard gig. Right. And they're trying to do something, you know, for these kids. And if I can help in some way, I'm all for it.
All right. Let me ask you this. When you think about what makes a good youth coach, and I'm not necessarily just specific, hey, it has to be basketball. But when you think about what makes a youth coach somebody that is going to have a positive impact on kids, what are some of the characteristics you think of when you think of somebody who's a good youth coach?
I think someone who understands that they have to get on these, and I'm talking about younger kids, right? Like especially younger kids, but get on their level. And I mean, even physically, I will kneel down and, you know, to be able to look at, you know, a kid in their eyes and remember that they're little people, man. They don't have, they don't, you know what I'm saying? They're yeah. just, and we forget as adults that unless someone has literally showed them or taught them or they've observed it some way, then they won't know. So you've got to be, so that's one thing, being on their level, finding patience, right, with them, because they're not going to learn it. You know, set the expectations where these are micro, iterations of improvement, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. So you've got to, you know, realize it's a long game. Absolutely. And then be able to talk to them or learn how to talk to the different personalities, right? And the different needs of these kids. This is what teachers go through, right? Teachers have to learn, you know, so-and-so learns better this way. So-and-so, you know, and you have to be observant in that way and really kind of, you know, be there for them. And I think last but not least is that remember to mark those specific moments. Don't just say, good job, Johnny. Like, hey, you know, I really like how you, you know, worked on what we were talking about before. Give them a specific example of what they did so they can feel that genuine moment, right? Because that's worth a lot. Any athlete in the world will, you know, can attest to the fact that confidence is such a huge part of your success. And you can do that for these kids. You can instill confidence. You can empower them, you know? So.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of that specificity when you're giving praise, because I know we can often look, it's easy to stand on the sideline or during a practice and say, good job, great job, way to go. And those are all things that, look, there's nothing wrong with those as things right. to say, but there are also things that are not actionable and that also don't allow the kid to understand and connect something that they did well with that praise. And so I love the idea of being specific with what the kid did. Hey, great job of shooting that layup with your left hand on the left side right. of the floor, or great job of passing away from the defense in this situation. So now a kid can connect something that they did well with that praise. And again, it's that old saying of what gets praised gets repeated. And so if you can be specific in what you say, especially again, when you start talking about with younger kids, that's a huge piece of what being successful as a coach, you're going to be able to relay your message and get them to understand mm-hmm. what you want them to do much better when you're specific than when you're just saying, hey, way to go, or great job. And then the other thing that I like that you talked about there is when we start talking about being, you know, being intentional with what you do as a coach, I think it's very important. It's easy, I think, sometimes to, you kind of get in the moment and you're doing X, Y, or Z. And sometimes, especially on the youth level where you don't have as much time to mm-hmm. plan and put things together. And obviously if you're coaching at the high school level or you're coaching at the college level, you're spending a lot of time in preparing for your practices and your games, and you're pretty intentional about what you do. Whereas a lot of times when you're a youth coach, right? You're a parent, you're a volunteer, you're not a full-time coach. You're grabbing a bunch of kids for an hour once or twice during the week. And, you know, okay, so we get all those things. And then you get into practice and sometimes you forget that intentionality. And so I think that's an important piece of it. And then I think the last thing that you touched on that I really liked, it always is something that I think about, is, you know, you mentioned how teachers have to be able to learn their students and learn the different ways that they learn and learn how to organize them and get them in places where they can learn. And I always think about, as a teacher, so every day, right now I'm teaching elementary phys ed, which I've been doing for 10 or 11 years. And before that I taught in the classroom at the elementary level for, I don't know, 19 years or something like that. And so I kind of take for granted my ability to sort of organize and talk to kids and kind of get things going. And there's times where I'll be in environments where there'll be somebody, again, who's a volunteer coach that's putting together a practice or whatever, and they have a hard time just getting kids into two lines or just having a hard time getting them to sit down and listen and focus on what they're talking about. And again, sometimes I look at that and I'm like, how do you not know how to do that? But then I forget that I do that for a living. I've been doing that for 35 years or whatever it is with kids. And so I kind of take it for granted. So I think one of the things when you start talking about youth coaches is there's a lot of things that go beyond your ability to understand basketball. Like, you know, you didn't talk about anything specific to the sport. You're talking about just an ability to relate to kids and put them in the best environment to be able to have success. So I think that those points that you made were really well taken. And I think when you start looking at what makes a good youth coach, those are all really great points that you made.
Well, I appreciate it. And let me just say this. Thank you, Mike, for being a teacher. It's got to be one of the hardest jobs. And I also say that because I can only imagine, because what you said is, it really aligned with what I was thinking, because I love coaching kids. But that doesn't mean it's not difficult. Like after school, when they are just like gassed from the day, their level of focus, you know, an 8 and 9 year old's level of focus is just like, it's a challenging thing. So, you know, you can only imagine what it's like for teachers that are doing this every single day, right? You know, and just keep on going. So thank you for that. That's, that's quite a calling. So,
yeah, absolutely. And again, it's one of those things that I would say it gets more difficult every year. It becomes more and more challenging. And yet at the same time, I always think about the fact that there are days where you come home from your job, and Jason is also a teacher, and I'm sure he can attest to the same thing, where you come home and you think, man, what was I doing there all day? Because just nothing went the way that I hoped it would. And it felt like nobody was listening, and man, we didn't get much accomplished. And then
I feel that way coaching sometimes too, Mike. I'm going to be completely honest, absolutely. Right? You think like you feel like you've dotted your I's and crossed your T's, and then you go to the next day to the game. I'm going to tell you, like, tonight's game did not go the way they anticipated my game to go tonight, because I thought the practice yesterday went really well and it did not go as well as I thought it would go today. So, but I think you have that coaching and teaching for sure.
Yeah, you do. And yeah. I think what, go ahead, JC.
Oh, no. You go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
So what I was going to piggyback on what Jason was saying is there are certainly days where I come home and I feel like, man, what did I accomplish? Why was I there? And then when you really pull back from the day to day, man, that was a tough day, or man, this group wasn't listening, or man, we had a tough loss as a coach. And then you really step back and you think about, well, yeah, maybe it was a tough day, and maybe 99 out of those 100 kids drove me crazy, and man, it just, they didn't get anything out of it. But there was probably one kid that maybe you put your arm around him and just said, you know, hey, good job. Or you just asked him a question about what was going on at home, or this kind of thing. And you realize that the impact that you can have both as a teacher, and I think obviously as a coach, you don't realize the impact that you can have on a kid without even knowing it. I say this all the time that I'm sure, JC, you can recall things that an adult said to you, whether it's a coach or a teacher, that drove you, that impacted you, that you felt. Hopefully you remember positive things, but it's also possible that there's some negative things that a coach or a teacher said to you that you still remember. And I'm guessing that most of the time, the things that we remember in that realm are things that if we went back to that coach or that teacher and said, hey, do you remember when you said X, Y, and Z to me? That person probably doesn't remember saying that thing. But I think the lesson in there is that as a coach or a teacher, you have to be very intentional about what you say and how you say it, because everything that you're saying is being taken in. And sure, there's lots of kids that don't remember on a given day what you say, but some random thing that you said can have a huge impact on a kid, both positively or negatively. And I think that's a huge, huge part of it. So I don't know what your experiences is with that personally, both on both sides of that equation.
Yeah, no. Like, well, I'll take, you know, my kids, for example. You know, as a parent, you say things all the time. And it's this thing where, like, 3 months later, you hear them echo it. You're like, oh my God, you were listening, you know?
Yep.
But what you just said is exactly right. Like, when you, as you were saying those things, I was thinking to myself, I was thinking about Bill Casey. I was thinking about Mrs. O'Reilly. I was thinking about Vince Wong. I was thinking about, you know, Mr. Hogarty. These are all teachers and coaches in my life that, I mean, were there for me in some way, shape, or form, and enough moments that they made an impact that I can remember their names, and I can, you know, I mean, you know, it makes a difference. Be intentional for your kid, for these kids. They're taking it all in, and you have the ability to make, you know, a positive impact, right? You have the ability to help them see a positive side of the world, and to help them be the best version of themselves, to find that empowerment and that confidence. So, you know, I hold that, you know, very close to when I'm coaching, right? I will take every single time I go, you know, I'm going coaching. Even if I'm running late, I take 5 minutes and I do like a breathing exercise to kind of settle myself from I'm leaving, you know, work for a meeting, because I want to be present. I need to be present for these kids. And I want to start off that way. So 5 minutes, that's it. And I do a breathing exercise. I get myself, you know, centered so that I can be the best version of myself for them, you know?
Yeah, that's a great way. It's kind of like that transition, right? To go from, yeah. Hey, I'm going from one stage of my day to the next stage. And I've heard different people talk about that. Like even had coaches say that they use that different types of techniques like that to bridge the gap at practice. So if I'm a high school coach, my kids are coming in from their day, who knows what was going on with classes, academics, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever, just drama with friends. And you walk in, you're like, okay, you got to kind of put all those things off to the side. And now it's time to practice. So what can we do? Whether it's some kind of breathing exercise, or maybe it's just a little team activity that you do for 5 minutes to kind of loosen everything up and sort of let kids transition. I think that's the same thing that you're talking about. And it's really good advice. I know that I've heard people talk about how they do that on their commute home from work, right? You get in the car and you drive home and you park the car in the garage and you take 30 seconds to take a deep breath and transition from, okay, work me is I'm leaving work me in the car. And now it's time to go in and make sure that I'm ready to be there for my family. And I think from a coaching standpoint, it makes complete sense what you're doing there to be able to just kind of get yourself, okay, where do I need to be so I can be at the best for the kids that I'm about to coach?
Right. Right. I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you this. You've been in a lot of different situations as a parent and as a youth sports coach. And so you've sat both on the bench and I'm sure in the stands many, many times. And we all hear the nightmare stories about youth sports and things that we see. So here's the question that I want you to ask. If you could take a magic wand and you could remove one negative aspect of youth sports, what would be that one thing that if you could just take a magic wand and wave it away, what's something that you would eliminate from youth sports if you could take away one thing?
Gosh, you know, my gut reaction sometimes is to say parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a parent, but I mean, like, it's like, don't put your expectations on your kids, man. Don't do that to, like, okay, so, okay, how do I put this? I've played sports for a long time. So to say that I'm competitive, you know, is, well, it's a reality. And so I do not like losing, right? That being said, especially, you know, with the experience I've had and just the way I approach coaching, this is one little piece of their huge lives. And I had this experience recently where I was partnering with coaching, right, with somebody else. And it really became something that was not very fun because we had players that were not being engaged. We just went with like this very, you know, two players dribbling it and going down. And it's like, okay, this is not healthy, right? These words are hard to come out. I would rather lose the games, you know, and have them like learn and become better, right? Than win those games, you know, and teach them something, and maybe they don't get it, and maybe it takes them, you know, more than one season. But I'd rather have that happen, right? And so going back to your question, like I see a lot of these parents, and they'll come to me and they'll say, well, so and so, I you know my son or my daughter, they're not really athletes, or, you know, and I'm like, what does that mean? Like, do you know you can look out into this field and there's not one professional player that's going to be in the future. It's just, it's astronomical, right? Everybody has a body. Everybody can learn. Now you've got different levels, fine, but don't take that away from them. Right. And don't set these expectations out there for these kids. I mean, let them try. Let them realize that if they put effort in, they can learn something, they can get better. Not than their peer, but than themselves, right? And then we've got these games where parents are either reliving their youth, or they're just like they're comparing their kids to other kids, and they're like, they're fine. Yeah. They're on the right path. They're okay. And that's it, you know?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I just had a conversation with a guy last night, and I went, my daughter's in eighth grade, and we went and watched the girls varsity basketball team play here in our community. And I was just having a conversation with another father who his son had played with my son earlier when they were in middle school and youth basketball. And he and I were just talking and just how fast it goes. My son's a senior, and you know, they played together when they were in third grade. And we were just kind of talking about, it's hard to believe that, you know, here we are, whatever, 9 years later. And, you know, you went through all this process, and his son played up through his sophomore year and then isn't playing anymore. My son's still playing on the team and whatever. But, you know, he and I were talking, and one of the things we said that kind of goes to your point is that, you know, it goes fast. And he said, you know, if we had to do it over again and go back, it's like, because I'd probably do some things differently. And I always say that, I told him, I said, what I would probably do at least slightly differently is I look at, sometimes I'll go and I'll be at a AAU tournament or a youth tournament, whatever, and I'll see these third grade basketball players, and they're just running around and doing all kinds of crazy stuff and whatever. And I told him, I said, I don't know how we ever remotely took that seriously in any capacity, you know, like losing sleep over, oh, we lost this game. And you know, obviously as a coach, it's different. As a parent, I don't look at it in the same, I'm pretty good about being disengaged from the result. As a parent, obviously you want your kid to do well, but I can walk away from it. As a coach, it's a little bit harder to walk away from it. But I just told him, I said, you know, you see all these people that are so high strung and stressed out with their kids' sports. And again, don't get me wrong, like sports is an important part of my family's journey, and you know, we take it seriously. But at the same time, I said, if I could just use one word for people, it's just like relax, because eventually the kids are going to kind of figure out who they are, what they are, who's going to work hard and continue to do it and play, and who's not. And again, very little of it has to do with you as a parent. So you got to just sit down and enjoy the journey, if that makes any sense.
It makes complete sense. And there, I mean, look, there are, you know, this is probably going to be somewhat controversial, but you know, there are a lot of professional scouts out there and what have you. And for all their knowledge and experience, there's nobody has a crystal ball. And for all of those, you know, examples that you see of players that, you know, oh, they practiced, you know, X many times a day when they were young, you know, that's not the norm. Like, right. That's not even I'm talking about even players that are professional that are great. They, I mean, yeah, when they became professional, they found it, but they may have started late, you know, when they were kids. They weren't necessarily the one that was launching the ball, you know. That's more normal, right? They found it later on, right? They're quietly came up, and then they found their rhythm, and they found it. So you don't know what's going to really click with somebody, because there's so much about it has to do with, you know, the kid. So all you can really do is, you know, try to, you know, keep that ground fertile, so that, you know, if it does click for them, they can take off, right?
Yep.
And you've provided a great foundation for them, you know, because you just don't know. Which is why, like, for instance, I'm right now coaching my daughter's JV basketball team, and you know, it's a small private school, so you know, we have 9 girls and various levels of experience. And I tell them, look, I want them to try. I don't care about whether you make the shot. I'm never going to get mad at them if they miss a shot. It's just not, that's not it. I want to teach them fundamentals. I want them to try, because that's going to, you know, get more results than anything else. If they feel like they have a place where they can make mistakes and it's okay, right? We learn from the mistakes, right? We talk about it, and we talk about what we can do differently. But that's the kind of fertile ground you want. You want them to you know, try things, because otherwise, for instance, when you're teaching them, you know, some kind of skill that's maybe even slightly more advanced, they're going to be tentative. And, you know, everybody knows in sports, that fluidity. You know, if you're tentative, if you're a tent, you're not going to perform well. You're just not. But if you try and you're and you feel comfortable in that space, you're more likely to be better. I have one. I'm going to two different personas. One is a player whose skill is, you know, let's say an eight, but their confidence is a six. And then another one whose, you know, confidence is a nine and their skill is a seven, whatever, what have you, right? The kid that's confident is going to show you more stuff because they're just going to try. They're just going to go for it, right? And they're throwing caution to the wind. And on the other one, you're having to say, come on, you can do it. You know, you're trying to get them to even try. And they're worried about making mistakes. They're worried about, like, you know, yeah, they're worried about making mistakes.
It's kind of the difference. Old school and new school. Old school and new school coaching, right? Old school coaching, probably when you and I were growing up, there was whatever percentage you want to throw on it, it was pretty high in terms of coaches that coach through fear and intimidation and yelling when somebody made a mistake. And that was common, right? I mean, that was sort of the way that it was perceived that good coaches did things. They didn't put up with mistakes. They didn't put up with people not doing what they were told by that coach to do. And the relationship piece of it wasn't nearly as important 30 years ago. And then you look at it the way that we do things today and just exactly what you're talking about, right? It's about empowering kids. It's about building their trust with you. It's about building the relationship so that you can give them that space to be able to perform at their best because they're not looking over their shoulder worried about, hey, am I going to get yelled at? Am I going to get taken out of the game because of this one mistake? And I think that especially when you're talking about youth sports, right? I mean, you get to a certain level of high school basketball or college basketball, and yeah, there are definitely things that there's more accountability and that you can still do it with love and all those pieces of it. But I think in youth basketball and youth sports, the idea that you're going to coach through fear as opposed to through love and through relationships, you know, hopefully that's starting to go by the wayside. It's not completely gone. You can go to any tournament in any sport and you're still going to unfortunately see the coach yelling at the sidelines. You're going to still see the parent doing some of the things that we wish they wouldn't do from the stands. But I think generally speaking, we're heading in the direction that you just described.
I think so. I mean, I think you're right. We're definitely heading towards that direction. And you're also right. There's still that aspect because people are, you know, holding over what happened when we were young and the way we were taught. To me, I've looked back and I've looked at, you know, I've looked at it holistically and try to, you know, take the things that I think were actually positive, right? Because I've seen a lot of, I saw like friends that burned out because their dads were just like on them. And, you know, it was crazy, right? And they just like, yeah, I'm done. I don't want to play this anymore. Like literally just, I don't want to play a game anymore.
Yeah.
A sport. It's like, you know, and we think about it, it's like part of playing sports is the fun, right? Is that aspect of it. And you've now taken that away from somebody. Wow, that's just
It's sad.
It's sad. That's, it really
that's
is sad.
Very sad. That's very sad. I have a story related to what you just said, and then also just something that I think about all the time. I think one of the things that we do wrong in sports at all levels is we're always focused as parents, I think, and then we push this onto our kids, is we're focused on what's next. So if I'm an elementary school kid, I'm focused on what AAU team am I going to get on? And if I'm on an AAU team, I'm focused on, am I going to be a starter on my middle school team? And if I'm in the middle school team, I'm focused on not on my middle school season, but I'm worried about, am I going to be on the freshman team or can I make the JV or should I be a varsity player? And then when I'm a high school player, I'm worried about where I'm going to go to college and I'm not focused on what I'm doing as a high school senior. And it's a slippery slope. Social media has something to do with that and the comparison and all those things. And so I think that burnout that you described with, you know, people that you grew up with that had parents that pushed them when they were young, probably more than they needed to or wanted to be pushed. And then you get to a point where sports isn't fun. And I actually had a conversation with somebody the other day that in our community, we have one program that is tremendously successful. And they were talking about, this person was telling me that they're a teacher at the high school. And they said that one of the girls who plays on the girls' soccer team here, which I think they were state runner up this year and they've won the state title, and they're perennially one of the five, best soccer programs in the state of Ohio. And yet at the same time, but from the time these girls are like six, they're playing travel club, they're driving an hour and a half, 2 hours to practice when they're 8, 9 years old, and they're practicing 3 or 4 times a week, and they're out of town for all these tournaments. And somebody said that, the teacher at the school said that one of the girls that's on that team said to the teacher, I hate soccer now. I only play because I still have a chance maybe to get a scholarship. And that's the only reason why I'm still playing. And, this girl's 16 years old or 17 years old and is saying, like, I hate the thing that should be, a high school sport should be, there shouldn't be anything much more fun than that. And when you don't feel that way, it's kind of sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is kind of sad. I mean, I do love one of the things you said when you're talking about this and we're worried about what's next and so forth. It's, you're actually robbing yourself of like making the most of the here and now, right? Like being intentional, being present. Like that's when you're you're the best version of yourself. That's when you can, really enjoy everything to the fullest. Because you're worried about the mistakes you made, in previous games, or you're worried about trying to make the next team or what have you. Yeah, you're just taking away from a limited amount of energy that, every human being has. Just be here and now, right? And yep. And that's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to do because there's so much out there, and there's so many parents talking about this and that and the next thing, and nobody wants to miss out and have their kid fall behind. And so you have all this peer pressure amongst parents, and then that trickles down to the kids, and everybody's talking about, again, what's happening next. And sometimes we miss what's right in front of us. And look, we're all guilty of that in our own lives to some degree, right? That, sometimes you do have to, just like you talked about, the breathing exercise to kind of center yourself and bring yourself into, hey, I got to be in this particular moment. I know I'm guilty of it. I'm sure most people out there are guilty of it to some degree, that you are sometimes looking ahead or looking back or not necessarily right where you are in the moment. That's important to do. And sometimes it's hard to do in your day to day. You tend to forget about it. So it goes back to that word intentionality of just making sure that you're doing things consciously as opposed to unconsciously. I think that's really important.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Let's talk a little bit about Sports Lab 360. Tell me how you got involved and what that's all about, and then kind of what your role has been. Because when we had Nick on, obviously we talked to him about just the development stage of it and kind of how he got the idea and where it came from. And obviously he started on the soccer side of it. So just tell us a little bit about kind of your role and how you got involved.
Yeah. So I'm a product manager by trade. That's in my career. So in technology, and, I'm not going to give you the whole story, but essentially I realized, why do I have my love of sports and my love of technology separate? Cause that's what it was. I was coaching separately, and I even coach adults too, so it was separate. And I was like, man, I had a mentor who was like, you know, why are you doing it separately? So I kind of started diving into sports tech, and in that process, I found Nick and I found his story, and it was so compelling. And I was like, man, this is great. So I reached out to him, we started talking, and I said, look, let me help you out. Look, this is what I do. And, I think I could, you know, I could offer some help. So we started collaborating, and started giving him some of the best practices that product management, you know, has to offer, in terms of, technology development and so forth. And in that process, it was around that time where I think he had been thinking about, you know, expanding, and we talked about it, and that's kind of how, you know, the whole basketball thing came up, and, you know, it was part of the conversations with that and some of the decisions and, you know, talking to some other, you know, partnerships around that. So that's kind of how that came along. But really, I loved what Nick was trying to do. I mean, he told you the story, you know, of how it all came about, and it really spoke to me, because he's out there to help, you know, youth athletes. This is another way for them to learn. And you guys are both teachers, so this might be, you know, relevant for you as well. It's like visual is such a big part of youth today. And it's definitely part of how they learn. And so what Sports Lab 360 is doing is also leveraging that to help them learn. It's for that kid who wants to, you know, get better, like Nick, right? And wants to increase that sports IQ, or that, you know, specific sport IQ, and really understand. And we want to foster that, right? Just like we would in the classroom, we'd want to foster somebody who is, you know, going to be in the spelling bee, and they really would love to do that, or they love reading, or they're really great at math, and you want to keep on fostering that, you know, watering that plant. You want to do the same thing if they're interested in something, if it's drawing, what have you, right? And so I think this is one of the things that I love about it, right? It's another avenue for kids to be able to, you know, find a way to better themselves because they want to, right? And that's really been the mantra for me, because, like, as opposed to when we grew up, you know, you had people that were designated or labeled athlete or not, you know, or what have you. And that really pruned the tree early on of who could, you know, who's going to play on teams or not, which I'm not a proponent of. I'm a proponent of letting kids try it out, right, and giving them the opportunity and helping them, you know, find you know, some level of mastery, regardless of, you know, of their, if you want to call it, natural ability or what have you. So that's where it came from, and that's, you know, and I advise for other companies, and I'm involved. I'm getting more and more involved in sports tech. It's actually really growing here in Houston. There's a lot of, like, startups in the sports tech, you know, space that are growing, and a growing number of them are, you know, really focused on the idea of, you know, opening it up to more versus trying to make the ones that are already at a higher level more elite, you know, open the tunnel a little more so that that funnel, you know, more kids can play in any sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when you start talking about the ability to expand the pool, right, and you're not just catering to the most elite, obviously from a business standpoint, there are very few kids who, again, are now, you can go to any tournament and read the number of teams that are calling themselves elite. But the reality is that when you start talking about the highest level, there just isn't, that's not a huge market, because there just isn't very many kids at that level. So from a business standpoint, if you can appeal to everybody, and then I love what you said about just thinking about the inclusiveness of kids who, again, you don't have to be a kid who is a potential NBA star, NFL star, Major League Baseball star. in order to benefit from some of these new technologies and training techniques and all the different things. What we want to do is, again, to be able to ultimately, there are very, very few people who ever earn a living from their ability to play a sport. But what we want to do is be able to utilize that sport to be able to improve a kid's life for the rest of their life. And in order for that to happen, kids have to be actively involved in sports for as long as we can keep them involved, not only for the life lessons, but also just for their health and their well-being and their enjoyment of, again, using their body to be able to do whatever it is that they enjoy doing. And so if technology can continue to open that door and foster that, then I think we're headed in the right direction. When you're thinking about Sports Lab 360, what's been the most interesting part to you of working with Nick to sort of build out what Sports Lab 360 does on the basketball side?
Yeah, I mean, I think just it's a different, so going from soccer to basketball, it's a different thing, right? There, it's a different beast, and it's apples and oranges. So it's been the journey of relearning how to, you know, how to create that basketball, I mean, that sports IQ with basketball, right? That's been fun because it's kind of like, how do we do this? How do we figure this out? Because the soccer was, you know, he'd gotten that, he figured it out, and he'd opened it up, right? And soccer is a different beast because you don't call a timeout and adjust, you know, and it's a different pace, right? And in basketball, you've got all these different components that you're working with. I'm not saying one's easier or harder. It's just different. So figuring that out has been really fun to kind of figure out what it is that the end users really need or really, you know, some of the pain points that they're going through and how we can solve those problems through Sports Lab 360, right? And it goes back to trying to get them, giving them another way to learn something so coaches can teach them something on the court. And then we can reinforce it right off the court. And it's really up to them because they can go on to the platform themselves, the players, and they can choose to, like, you know, I really wasn't sure I got that pick and roll that we were talking about. And, you know, let me go to the platform and see if I can kind of figure this out. And they'll go in, you know, they can go in there and they can keep on looking at it. And it's, you know, when you're on the court, you're looking at it from a first person point of view. But when you're on the platform, you can see it from above. You can see where all the other players are. So again, it's a different way of seeing it and incorporating that knowledge, right? And so they're learning in a different way.
One of the things that I like about it is that when you talk to players and coaches in high school and in college, and the more we've talked to people on the podcast, we've had conversations about how much time those coaches at those levels spend watching film. And obviously they share that film with their players, and some players watch more film than others, but clearly coaching staffs at the high school and college level are sharing both team clips and then clips of their individual players, things that they're doing, both things that they're doing well and things that they can improve on. And they, to a person, talk about how important that is in a player's and a team's ability to improve. And then when you talk about on the youth level, right, we don't always have the same access to film that you do at a high school level or at a college level. But I think what is interesting is that Sports Lab 360 provides an opportunity for kids to be able to almost learn. Yes, they're learning their basketball IQ, but they're also learning how to learn. Mm-hmm. And they're learning how to watch that film and what things they can be looking for. And when I think about my own kids' experiences as, let's say, basketball players in elementary school, it was difficult sometimes. Like, again, not that we had very much film, but if somebody filmed something on their iPad or phone and you get a little clip and you could kind of show it to them, and again, kids are watching that like, hey, look at me make this shot. They're not necessarily looking for some of the things that they're getting to see with Sports Lab 360. And so I guess one of the things that I think is valuable that I'd be interested to just and I don't know if I talked really with Nick much about this, but I just think that almost like that learning how to watch film and learning how to learn, again, in addition to the actual content that they're learning and the actual skill that they're learning, the reads, the decisions that they're making, they're also just learning, hey, what do I have to watch for that if I continue in the game, when I start watching film as I get older, I think that just that experience to me would seem like it would be really beneficial.
I agree with you. And Mike, this is full circle, dude, because you got to think about it. We're talking about pickup games at the beginning of the podcast, right?
Right.
And that's where our lab was. We were learning. Like, yeah, we were doing things over and over again, and we were in that situation. And so we were learning. So like, if you look at, you know, Sports Lab 360, the way it works out is that you're actually given situations and you're making decisions, right? So yep. it's a similar thing that we learned when we were doing the pickup games, because we were encountering similar situations all the time, and we learned. It may have been a longer process or different, and you know, you were actively involved, but it was a very similar thing. And so I use video all the time. I've been using video for a while because it helps me to communicate to kids much more rapidly. Like, look over here, right? Yeah, you had your foot here. We talked about it. And it's an easier way to communicate with them when they're seeing it visually. We forget how difficult it is for kids to, you know, conceptualize things, you know, because verbally, because I mean, we may think we're talking in a very plain way, but we're not for kids. You know what I'm saying, right? Because we think we're using very plain words, but no, you're talking halfway through, they're still trying to process the first piece that you're trying to communicate. And so having that video, you can just show them, look right here, right here, right here, and they get it so much quicker. There's a company here that I was talking to as well, B1 Sports, and he is using computer-aided vision to like help kids, you know, be able to visualize like, oh, you know, like this is your shot, right? For example, for basketball. And it, you know, you can look, you can use it to kind of like learn on your own, and you can use an iPad or whatever. Anyway, so the point is that he wants kids to, you know, of all levels to use it so that they can, you know, get, you know, better at their shot if they want to, right? And they have this technology where it's not only recording the video, but it's using computer aided vision to kind of show them some of the differences from, you know, from a correct posture or correct form, right? It's pretty cool tool, by the way. But yeah, I mean, and I love that because it gives us similar, you know, similar learnings that we were talking about with the pickup, because that's what for me pickup basketball was. I was constantly learning, and it took me so much further in terms of my IQ. And I was able to apply that to the systems that were, you know, in my formal basketball or my coached basketball, right? And apply those things. Yeah. So I love that.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think that when I hear you talking, one of the things that popped into my head as you're saying that it's not always, we think that something is easy for a kid to pick up and we're teaching it, and yet it's very, very difficult. And just as an example, like I have my kids at school as part of our phys ed class, we teach them how to hula hoop, and yet I can't hula hoop at all. So the kids will say to me, come on, I'll have kids, they can do it for a half hour and they barely are moving. Like they're barely moving their hips at all. And then I can't keep the thing up for 2 seconds. And they're like, Mr. Cleansing, just do it like this. And I'm like, yeah, I can't really do that. Now, again, I don't really ever take the time to practice, and who knows, maybe I could learn. But the point is that sometimes there's things that I look at that I'm teaching them to do, and I'm like, how can this kid not do that? And yet here's a skill that I just don't naturally have, or I'm not naturally good at. I haven't put the time in to be able to learn it. And what seems easy to a kid who's 6 is really hard to 53-year-old me. And so I think it goes back to, again, you just, if you have different tools and different ways of being able to show a kid how to do something and to be able to to teach it in different ways. We all learn in those different aspects. And so I think it's just interesting to really think about how we learn and what those processes look like and how we kind of take for granted that the things we do well, everybody should be able to do well. The things that are difficult for us, we kind of don't always process that, hey, maybe this is how the kid feels when I'm teaching them how to shoot a layup and they're jumping all over the place and throwing the ball different kind of ways and whatever. It's just, again, you forget that they're kids and you forget that everybody learns differently and everybody has some things that come to them easily and other kids have things that come to them much more in a much more difficult way. So when you provide them with these different platforms to be able to learn, ultimately, that's what we were talking about earlier, where you got to get to know your students, you got to get to know your players, and the more tools you can give them, the better off they're going to be in the long run, for sure.
I agree. I mean, exactly right. I mean, this goes, I mean, you guys know better than I do in teaching, right? Kids are learning in different ways, you know, and there are theories about there about, you know, some kids are more tactile and, you know, there are kids that have dyslexia or some other, you know, alternative ways of looking at seeing the world. Well, if that's the case, then we should have more of these tools so they have different ways of possibly learning and grasping the concept. And by the way, this also goes back to the conversation about parents, because parents, I know that they're trying to do their best for their kids, but when they're talking to them, they feel like, well, I've told you this 1,000 times. Well, I mean, is the kid actually trying to do the opposite, or they're just not getting it because they don't understand it? I mean, you know, as an adult, you have to figure that out. But if it's the fact that they're not getting it, and sometimes kids will say, you know, nod like, oh yeah, I get it, and they don't.
Right. Absolutely.
And yeah, so.
Yeah, I've been there many times. I've been there with the head nod, and then I do the opposite thing, and not because I'm being oppositional, just because I was pretending like I got it, and yeah, I didn't really have it. All right, I want to ask you kind of a final question to sort of summarize, I guess, the big picture. So you've kind of talked a little bit about how you're looking to be able to wed your love for sports with your love for technology. So when you think about sort of where, on a big picture, where sports and technology is headed, you can take this answer in whatever direction you want. You can take it down to specifics. You can give a general trend. But what do you see in the future when it comes to sports and technology? What are some things you see on the horizon that you think are going to make an impact?
Yeah. So I see that the technology is not only going to be used for these, we'll call them more elite or club level, let's say, you know, players, right? And that takes them into higher or professionals. We're actually going to see a shift where everybody, like even adults that didn't have the opportunity to play and they always wanted to learn how to, you know, hit, you know, a baseball or, you know, kick a soccer, you know what I'm saying? They, you know, it's gonna open up the sports to more people, kids for sure, right? But even adults that never really had that opportunity because for whatever reason, because they were labeled as non-athletic, and later on, like I literally know three people that I coach, three adults that I coach that are into basketball now in adulthood, and they are fully in. Well, they're a lot younger than me, but they're adults still. And they are learning and they're, you know, trying to grasp it. So technology is going to help that, right? Because it's going to open the door to allow people to learn on their own in a safe place. So like we're talking about that B1 Sports, one of the things that it does for you is that you don't have to do it in front of anybody else. You can practice on your own, but you have your own, like almost like a coach there, right? That'll help you perfect your shot or get better at your shot, really, right? And so that the technology is going to be there so you can learn on your own as if you had a coach next to you. And I think that's where it's going to go to in different ways. And you'll have these a way to have feedback, right? Because, man, I'm, like you have kids out there that are shooting, and we still have the chicken wing, and we still have, you know, chunking it up.
Right.
And that's just that's a product of their objective is to get it into the hoop. Yeah, that is maybe ultimately, but you know, if we could get them to actually learn form earlier on and somehow get them to, you know, enjoy or be motivated to use that form, imagine how much better it would be when they actually start playing organized ball. And as a coach, I don't have to, you know, get them to unlearn the chicken wing or the chucking of the ball, right? I don't care about distance at an 8-year-old or 9-year-old. I don't care. I don't care if they make it. In fact,
right.
I would much rather them use, you know, decent form, right? So that when they actually get the physical ability, they're able to, I mean, they're going to be far, you know, further ahead of any of their peers in that regard. And so I think technology is going to help that. It's going to help, you know, open that funnel a lot more so that more kids, more people in general can participate and find a level of mastery in a given sport.
Yeah. I mean, we're all already carrying around a supercomputer in our pocket, and
yeah,
you're also looking at eventually that thing's just going to become a super coach. And it already is in a lot of cases when you start thinking about, again, the capabilities of what it can do on the positive side. We don't want to dive into the negative side of what could be out there in terms of that. But certainly from a positive standpoint, there's a ton of positives that can come of it. I think you make a great point that it almost democratizes, right, the ability to be able to learn, because everybody has access to the phone and the technology. I mean, there are very few pockets of people, at least here in the United States, that
right,
that don't have access to the phone and to the technology to be able to get on there and be able to see those things.
Right. And I'm gonna give you an example that's, you know, if you go to Europe, right? So let's take Victor Wembanyama. They had a little clip of him the other day, and he was juggling the basketball on his feet, right? And then he did a rainbow, and because he's from Europe, so he learned soccer as a little boy,
right?
Right? It's a 7'4" dude that can juggle a ball, yep, with delicacy. All right, why am I bringing that up? Because the U.S. still has a vast untapped potential in soccer. Vast. And so when you talk about democratizing, right, well, that's going to be part of it, right? When you start making it more ubiquitous where everybody can, whatever sport it is, and you can do that, you're opening up quite a bit.
Yeah, you absolutely are.
I mean, we don't start playing, and I'm using soccer as an example, we don't start playing soccer until, like, you know, I mean, it's obviously a lot more than when you and I were kids, right?
Yep,
but,
yep.
But it's still not nowhere near what you see in South America or in Europe. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I certainly think that when you start talking about opportunity, right, it's opportunity. And I think that's where youth sports, technology, all those things kind of come together, is can we provide opportunities? It ties into parenting, right? You mentioned keeping the soil fertile. And I think that's one of the jobs of a parent, is to provide your kids with opportunities, because you never know where they're going to end up. I mean, a lot of times people try to pigeonhole their kid into this sport or that sport or whatever. And I always have told parents, my opinion has always been that until your kid hits puberty, you really have no idea what they're going to be. You don't know if they're going to be tall, short, fast, slow, quick. Well, you have no idea. And so to limit what they do athletically at age 8 or 9, because they maybe show some early talent in one area versus another. I mean, you might think, hey, my kid's the greatest third grade basketball player in the history of the world, and they end up being 5'4". Well, yeah, they might still love basketball, but their prospects as a basketball player, you know, even to play at the high school level, you know, probably aren't that good. So maybe if you'd have kept them involved in 3 or 4 different sports, maybe they would have evolved into something that, you know, would have been a better fit for them. And so I just think, again, all the things, it's funny because we've had probably JC five or six different threads that we've talked about throughout the conversation. And we could easily go back and tie all those threads together with, again, the goal being trying to provide the best possible opportunity for youth sports, for kids to be able to, again, utilize sports to stay healthy and learn life lessons that can impact them for the rest of their life. So, all right, before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, find out more about what you're doing, share how they can get in contact with you guys at Sports Lab 360. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like I'm pretty active on LinkedIn right now more than anything else. I'm going to try other platforms pretty soon, but that's really where you can mainly find me. And then of course, Sports Lab 360, you know, reach out. Anybody who's interested in finding out a little more about Sports Lab 360, you know, just reach out there. I like I said, I've been diving more into the sports tech ecosystem here in Houston because it's growing. And so that's why the whole LinkedIn component, because just most of these people are on there, and so I'm really kind of diving in there. If you guys are ever in Houston, you should, I'd love to take you around to the different like startups that are happening here. There's this one, you know, big, sports tech festival called Pocket Talk, and it's everything sports and technology, and they're going to be here, you know, this next year, and it's pretty big. So, but yeah, contact me on LinkedIn or Sports Lab 360.
Very cool. JC, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us. Truly appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.